From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 17th day of June 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri, and Drew Lerner will join us from his offices in Kansas City, Missouri to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. He's with World Weather Incorporated. Along the way, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions will tell us a little bit about his discussion points for tomorrow's webinar on sustainable agriculture and how water is changing in the state of Illinois because of the climate. You'll want to hear that and then, of course, register for the webinar series. You can find the registration information on our website right now at willag.org because it is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now let's take a moment for some peace and calm. Here are the birds from my backyard about mid-morning today. In Chicago, July corn today up a penny and a quarter at $3.30 and a quarter. December, $3.42 and three quarters unchanged. And March contract down a quarter at $3.53 and three quarters. Next year's May corn at $3.60. A half lower in the July, down a half as well at $3.65. July soybeans up four and a quarter, $8.71 and a quarter the settlement price. November there at $8.76 and a half, up three and a half in January futures. Three and a quarter higher at $8.79 and three quarters for the soybeans. Next year's July at $8.83 and three quarters. They finished up three and three quarters of a cent. Bean oil futures at $28.10, up 11 cents. The bean meal at $2.87.80, 10 cents lower for the day. Wheat futures July soft red, down seven and a quarter. Settlement price there at $4.88 and three quarters. And the September at $4.94, down seven and a quarter. The hard red July down five and three quarters at $4.30. 32.5. Live cattle futures lead option June contract at $96.50, up 17.5 cents for 100 pounds. August at $96.85, 7.5 cents higher. And feeders at $133.57.5 in the August, up 70 cents. Lean hogs for the July contract unchanged today at $49.65. Crude oil futures around 33 cents a barrel lower at this hour, July. Ethanol futures 3.5 cents higher at $1.23.5. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.18.1. That's just about unchanged on the day. Gasoline on the RBOB around 0.6 cents higher at $1.21.3. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for being with us for this Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, you're welcome, Todd. You know, I love it.
Let's begin where we normally do. So kind of go through some of the numbers as they're related to the stats.
Alrighty. Well, we'll start with some support and resistance. July corn support at 308, resistance at 329. Support 325, resistance at 355. Now, these are monthly numbers. Beans, this changed. Resistance is now at 866 from being 829 last week. And resistance is at 875. So we've had a little bit of improvement there. November beans, we now are at 870 for support and 891 for resistance. Dow Jones, 25,230 for support, 29,568 for resistance. So we're still trading in that range we were in last week. And U.S. dollar gained a little bit. So support is now at 96,34 instead of 95. And the resistance is at 97,87. When we look at the managed money this week, Todd, the soft red wheat is now short 34,000 versus 17 last week. Corn, this is a little scary, 297,000 short versus 274,000. And I mentioned before, 300,000 area has been a turning point, and at least was in 2019. So we'll look to see if we get more of a boost out of that along with the weather. Soybeans, long 25,000 versus 21,000 last week. Meal short 53 versus 49, and soy oil has turned negative and is now short 3 versus being long 15 last week. When we look at our export inspections, wheat exports running 23% behind a year ago, They were 64% last week, so they made quite a jump. Corn 25% behind a year ago, 26% last week. Beans are 1% ahead of a year ago, 2% ahead last week. So we're just kind of falling into what the USDA has told us they were forecasting as we've been going along.
What do you think about crop conditions across the United States?
Well, you know, we saw a decline in corn conditions. They went from 75 down to 71. And when you look at the soybean conditions, stayed exactly the same, which isn't a real big surprise, I guess. You know, and, what I'd have to say is I think so much of it is related to soil moisture. And, you know, we've had a bit of a block going on here. So some of these places that where they've been saying, you should get rain, you should get rain, you should get rain, they're not getting rain. So, you know, the five states that had the highest soil moisture this week were North Carolina, Wisconsin, Michigan, Missouri, and South Dakota. And the five states with the driest soils, and this is where my concern is Indiana, Illinois, Arkansas, Nebraska, and Kansas. Now, you know, big winds have been accompanied a lot of this heat. And, you know, we've got a pretty shallow rooted crop in a lot of these places. So, you know, I always believe a short-term dry spell isn't that bad because it really forces that plant to go down and put some roots down. But when I mentioned that to one of my clients, he said, I agree with that. But he said, with the winds they've been having, those corn roots are going to look like Popeye's arms. And so I thought, wow. So, you know, I think we'll probably see another decline in crop ratings next week. And it probably beans will probably go along with it. And so, you know, it's just, it's that time of year, and let's face it, in this particular market circumstance, probably one of our only hopes is to have some type of a weather disturbance to give us a bit of a boost in the market.
Hey, just a reminder from a conversation we had last week, what are the 2 week after the report numbers?
2 weeks after the report, when we look at corn, basically up 23 cents or down 31 cents. And the down 31 is the most likely to happen when you look out of the 15 years that this follows, 20 years that this follows. One, the positive only is 5 out of the 20 years, but I think this year could be just the opposite of that. We look at soybeans up 42 cents when they go up or down 40 when they go down, and it's about equal to how many times they've done that over the last 20 years. So I think that we got to be on the ball. You have to reward. You have to reward rallies and be willing to, you know, accept the fact that, you know, we're living on hope right now. And hope is really not a strategy when it comes to trying to sell grain or make a living.
One of the hopes is that phase one will be fulfilled by China. Anything from that nation of interest?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they've been aggressive buyers. You know, they continue to buy beans. They've been buying corn. This week, they actually took beans out of the Gulf and a good amount of beans, as well as out of the interior. So we didn't see anything go out of the Pacific Northwest at all. I've seen a lot of blurbs coming out of China saying that they're dead serious about meeting the requirements for phase one, which kind of, who knows if that's propaganda or not, but that's what they say, and it looks like they're following through.
And finally, what do you know from South America? I know they're working in Brazil, trying to get through a whole bunch of things, the pandemic, and of course they're pretty close to starting or right in the beginning of corn harvest, or should be.
Oh, yeah, they're harvesting, and one of the things that the president of the Rural Syndicate says that the farmers have sold about 60% of the anticipated corn production, but the revenues may be kind of disappointing, and this is interesting. Due to lower yields and the fact that they bartered some of their future production for the inputs needed to produce the crop when corn prices were much lower. So, you know, they're hung with that requirement of how many bushels they have to do it, because they don't barter it by price, they barter it by bushels based on price at the time. I didn't think they were doing that much of this anymore, but I know that there were a lot of problems. Spot price for corn in Mato Grosso this last week was $3.30 a bushel. Farmers have been very aggressive sellers of 2021, and they're 35% sold already by the end of May. So, but the price for 2021 right now is at $2.60 a bushel. So that's a huge difference. I mean, especially when you look down there at you know, what it costs to be able to transport anything to a port. And speaking of ports, at the port of Paranaguá, which Jeff and I had the pleasure of being able to go to when we went to Brazil, they had the largest vessel ever to dock in southern Brazil there. It was loaded with 103,000 tons of soybean meal, which is also a record amount for the port. It's called the South Pacific, and it's 292 meters long. So, you know, three times that is, what, 900 feet long about, and 45 meters wide. And so they said that's 38 meters longer than the prior record. And most of the grain vessels that come in there are 199 to 229 meters. So this baby is big. There's no question. The soy meal was headed to Amsterdam, and they said the soy meal used to fill the vessel was actually drawn from three different grain terminals. They've really improved things since we were down there. They said the port of Paranaguá has the capacity to load grain or soy meal onto a vessel from 11 different grain elevators at one time. And it's the only port in Brazil with that much flexibility on how it loads a vessel. So if we did this in beans, that particular ship could carry 2,266,000 bushels of beans, the equivalent of 3,400 semi-trucks. Can you imagine that? So if the weather cooperates, they say, and there's no rain, it takes about 5 days to load it. So the big deal down there right now is this 90-day soybean-free period, and it goes on until September. You know, they do this to control Asian rust because, you know, Asian rust can cause up to a 20% loss in production. So all the volunteer bean plants have to be destroyed, whether they're in your ditch or whether they're in your field. Dr. Cordonier had a great picture of a field just covered with them. I don't know how the farmer is going to go through and destroy them all, but they get fined if they're not destroyed, and for good reason. And you mentioned the pandemic, and despite COVID-19, all of their inspectors are out there in those fields checking to make sure that these guys are getting rid of those beans. And that's just how important it is down there. Argentina only got a little bit of info this week. Soybeans are 99.4% harvested versus 95.3 for their five-year average. And so it looks as if the weather is kind of stabilized down there and everything else is the same as it always is in Argentina.
Indeed. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Thank you, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vake. She is with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. Here are just a couple of agricultural news stories. Exports to China are lagging, according to Agricultural Economic Insights. Agricultural economist David Widmer says before the trade war, soybean exports accounted for 51% of all U.S. ag exports to China. He writes, based on the first 4 months of 2020, trade with China has been disappointing. Pre-trade war levels over that same time period in 2017 totaled $7.1 billion. And this ethanol news, retroactive ethanol waivers for small oil refineries, should be off the table at the Environmental Protection Agency, according to one U.S. senator. Iowa Republican Chuck Grassley says it's a big concern of his and corn farmers that EPA does not immediately dismiss the so-called gap waivers that he calls a blatant attempt to go around federal court rulings.
Not only will they lose again in court, they will also risk President Trump's support in Iowa and other Midwestern states. This pattern of RFS abuse must end. Administrator Wheeler should publicly dismiss these ridiculous petitions as soon as possible.
Grassley is even more concerned that the renewable fuel standard could suffer grave damage in 2022 when it must be rewritten or expire. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Starting tomorrow, the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership will kick off a three-part webinar series highlighting the use of land stewardship and soil health management as a tool to mitigate production and market risk. The first webinar in the free series features Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions discussing water, rainfall, and the changing climate.
Yeah, we're going to talk about water, and we're going to be talking about any discernible changes in the way that the atmosphere is delivering it and the way that the land is managing it. And so we're going to look at some longer-term trends on how precipitation's been changing, specifically looking at If there's any sort of signal in change in big events, so those being events that have, you know, more than an inch or two in a 24-hour time period, we're going to be looking to see if the data supports the kind of anecdotal evidence that planting windows are getting tighter in the spring. And we want to talk about how much additional water we're actually getting throughout the growing season here in the state of Illinois and what its potential impacts are on agriculture. So this one's going to be all about water and looking at those long-term statistics and trying to understand what that means in terms of resiliency, what it means in terms of profitability, and what it means in terms of just normal operations on the farm as we work our way through the beginning of this new century here.
This is some research that the university and you have been doing for, I think, decades now. So it harkens back to the time that you've had as a meteorologist and as a researcher and a professor.
Yeah, and that's, I think, the one thing I've always been most focused on is trying to understand water. Because honestly, when we look and try to pull out what are the major risk factors on yield, corn, soybeans, you know, a lot of times we always say, oh, it's temperatures and it's water. But in reality, you can end up getting high temps, but if you have decent moisture, and you know, the crop can do okay. So it seems to be more of the emphasis from the research that I've done and what I've read from hundreds of publications is just about how much water is in the atmosphere, how much is in the soil, and how much can the plant use. And so we're trying to study what those long-term trends are and report them so that folks know what we've been looking at and get that research out as far and wide as we can.
And this will happen tomorrow?
That's right. We're going to have the webinar tomorrow on Thursday, and it'll be right at 11 o'clock Central Time, and really looking forward to this one.
The Bridging the Gap webinars are a joint effort of the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership, including University of Illinois Extension. The programs are free and all start at 11 a.m. You may register online for each of the webinars at IllinoisSustainableAg.org. That's ILSustainableAg.org. The first in the series showcases water in the landscape and features Eric Snodgrass. Others include U of I's Gary Schnitke and Jonathan Kappas, exploring how to increase working capital through soil health and the future of consumer demand for sustainably raised row crops. Again, you can register online right now at ilsustainableag.org. On this Wednesday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It appears, Drew, that the summer is lining up to be interesting weather-wise. I'm thinking because we have dry conditions in the southwest, and then there are some unique conditions in the Canadian prairies. Can you tell me about both of those and what that might mean for the Midwest?
Well, you know, both areas need to be closely monitored, even though they're a long ways away from the key corn and soybean producing areas. The southwestern U.S. plains have been quite dry here for a while. We've been seeing a steady diet of 90-plus degree temperatures. In the northern plains, we've seen a notable expansion of drought conditions in eastern Montana and the western parts of the Dakotas. And that does extend northeast into the southeast corner of Saskatchewan and into parts of Manitoba. The concern here is for both of these dry areas, there's potential for them to merge together. That would be of interest for the Midwest, because what would happen if that were to take place is that it would make our summer ridge a little bit stronger. By putting dryness in the northern latitudes, it would help to make the top of the ridge stronger, which would then reduce the number of storms that could break through the top of that ridge and move across the northern and eastern Midwest, which was the expectation for the middle and latter part of summer this year. So keeping the dryness in place out there in the High Plains region is a concern in my mind. We're a ways away from that being an issue because obviously the forecast right now for the heart of the Midwest is for rain, and we're going to finish out this month with an abundance of it. And that's so very important, especially in the Western Corn Belt, because when we do get the ridge back, and it'll be back in July, I guarantee you, in the first week of the month, we'll see that ridge already pushing itself into the area. So if we get to the 1st of July and we have abundant moisture, a couple of things are going to be working in our favor. Number one, obviously, we've got a good cushion to take us through some of the drier weeks in August before there's any kind of serious crop moisture stress. So that's one plus. The other plus is that having abundant moisture when the ridge of high pressure comes back might actually help to keep the ridge from getting too strong over the Corn Belt. And the ridge will probably want to stay in those drier areas a little farther to the west. Well, that'll help reduce the potential for excessive heat in the western Corn Belt and may leave the door open for a possible periodic rain event across northern and eastern portions of the Midwest. But again, if we keep the droughty conditions up there in the northern plains and Canada's prairies, that may not work out real well. But regardless, the moisture abundance that we are going to obtain here over the next couple of weeks is going to be just so important for buying time for especially the corn crop. Obviously, soybeans, with them reproducing and filling later in the year, might still be a potential issue, and we'll have to watch that.
Other places around the planet that you've been watching?
Well, we're watching Europe and parts of the former Soviet Union still. There's no big crisis in either place right this moment, but there is a new ridge of high pressure that's going to be building up across Western Europe as we go through this coming weekend, and it'll broaden itself out over next week. Portions of France and Germany, as well as the United Kingdom, have been a little dryish at times during the growing season, and putting the ridge back over these areas will allow them to dry back down again. Now, if for some reason the ridge does not move out of the region after the end of next week, there could be a potential issue there for parts of Europe. So we'll watch that. Right now, that ridge is supposed to be transient and not be persistent in that region for more than 7 days. And then in the former Soviet Union, of course, the big issue there is that there's still some places in part of Russia that are running a little dry. It isn't critical, but that same ridge that I just talked about for Europe will eventually work its way into the western parts of the former Soviet Union, western Russia and Ukraine, and that will obviously accelerate drying in some of that region and could bring a little bit more of a dryness issue to that area as well. And then the last place that I really wanted to make mention of real briefly here is China. You know, for the last few months, getting information out of China has been just about impossible. But we've made mention a couple of times about bad flooding that's occurred over there. Well, the flooding that used to be mostly confined in southern China has expanded to the north now, and east-central parts of China have had some crazy rain amounts here recently, and I believe their rapeseed and wheat crop were not completely harvested. If they were even halfway done, I'd be kind of surprised. And some of this rain probably caused some damage to both those crops. And in the meantime, there's more rain coming up next week that could harm some of the summer crops as well. So it'll be interesting to see. Unfortunately, I just can't get any information out of China to verify what the extent of the damage has or has not been.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated.